This is Brewers on Tap.
Back with episode number 11 of Brewers on Tap, the official podcast of the Milwaukee Brewers. My name is Jeff Levering, your host of the podcast, and don't forget to submit your questions each and every week via Twitter at Brewers with the hashtag Brewers on Tap. We had some great questions this last week for one of our guests in this week's episode. That's Miller Park organist Dean Roscoe. We'll get to those answers during our interview with Dean, as well as a conversation that I have with Corey Knable, reliever with the Colorado Springs Sky Sox a couple of weeks ago. You'll hear from Corey Knable later on in the program as well. Without further ado, let's get this podcast going with This Week in Brewers History.
And now, This Week, the Brewers History.
Well, this week we go back to May 16th, 2004, when Ben Sheets strikes out 18 batters in a 4-1 win against the Atlanta Braves. And those 18 strikeouts set a franchise record. Sheets allowed three hits, a home run to Andrew Jones in the seventh inning for the only run they allowed in the game, walked one, and threw 116 pitches in the game. Amazingly, 91 of those 116 pitches were strikes. Sheets gave up a double to the first batter that he faced and then retired 15 batters in a row. He would strike out six of the final seven batters, including striking out the side in the ninth inning, getting Adam LaRoche, who we've seen with the Chicago White Sox here over the last couple of days at Miller Park, J.D. Drew, and Johnny Estrada to finish it out. The previous strikeout high for the Brewers was Moose Haas with 14 back on April 12th, 1978 against the Yankees. That's This Week in Brewers History with Ben Sheets striking out 18 batters in a 4-1 win against Atlanta on May 16th, 2004. Well, in other news this last week, you may not have heard, but if you haven't heard, you might be living underneath a rock. Bob Uecker, as well as the radio broadcast team, Joe Block and yours truly, Bob's wife, Judy, and Commissioner Emeritus Assistant Mary Burns, as well as producer and engineer Kent Sommerfeld, we got trapped in the radio booth this last week at Miller Park. The door hinges weren't working. We could not get out. We took the handle off. Nobody could get in. Nobody could get out. So what we had to do was bring the ladder in from the outside, and somebody crawled in the booth, unhinged the door off the hinges. It was a big old fiasco, but it was a lot of fun, and yes, everybody is okay, especially Bob. But to get the full gist of what happened that night, let's take a listen to how the broadcasters saw it from the Dodgers booth as well as our own radio booth.
Uecker has been locked into his own booth. So apparently the ladder, Uecker's ladder, was there to get a repairman up there to open the door.
Folks here who do all sorts of things around Miller Park, taking the door off the hinges, coming up a ladder into the booth, taking the door off the hinges. We have a means of escape. We have some new material for that rooftop sitcom. Now we could we got some new material for something else with this.
That was just one of many highlights over the last week, and under new manager Craig Counsell, over the last week and a day, the Brewers have gone 5-3. They took a series from Chicago, they split a four-game series against the Dodgers, and they got off to a good start against the Chicago White Sox with a 10-7 win on Monday night. Included in this week's highlights, Jason Rogers hit his first big league home run off the bench. Mike Fiers threw an immaculate inning, striking out the side on just nine pitches. Elion Herrera hit a couple of home runs. Both gave the Brewers leads both on Sunday and Monday. And Martin Maldonado had a game for the ages on Mother's Day. So let's go back and take a listen at the highlights of the week that was.
Here's the 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. And Fiers strikes out the side. He has struck out eight Dodgers here this afternoon.
Gomez on the move. Jeanette swings, hits it well, right center field, and that is gone. Scooter Jeanette is back, and the Brewers grab the early lead.
certainly survived all of that with the offensive firepower. Here's Adam Lind with a fly ball to right field and going back at the wall. Gone! Ethier ran out of room and Adam Lind goes downtown and the Brewers have jumped all over Wieland in the first. And there's a base hit to right field. That's going to score Segura. And it's a five-run first for Milwaukee. There's a fly ball. Hit back into right field toward the corner. And it is gone. Three-run shot. Ryan Braun in the ninth. And it's a one-run game. Has 10 strikeouts. Can he make it 11? Yes, he can. Jimmy Nelson, 11 punch-outs, 7th inning stretch. Cubs up by 2. There's a drive, left center field, and that is gone! Jason Rogers, a pinch-hit home run, and the Brewers break it open in the 5th. First big league home run for Jason Rogers. Maldonado, a drive deep left field. This game is tied. Herrera fly ball deep left field. That goes covering. Here's the 1-1. It is! Brewers win it! Maldonado ends the game for the Brewers! He tied it in the 7th. He ends it in the 11th. As the Brewers take 2 out of 3 from the Cubs.
Well, happy Mother's Day, Mrs. Maldonado, right?
There's a fly ball hit back in the left field, and that is gone! Elian Herrera strikes again!
Hey, God, I told you that he hit the ball out of the ballpark. How about that kid?
Hit in the air to left and deep. Way back. Get up. Get up. Get out of here and gone for Chris Davis. What a shot that was by Davis, no doubt about it. High, towering home run. And the Brewers get another. Told you, he's been red hot and continues tonight.
The club is certainly playing a lot better baseball here of late under new manager Craig Counsell. Better pitching, better offense, and the defense has certainly shored up a little too. A sign of good things coming here in Milwaukee. Well, a couple of weeks ago, I had an opportunity to go to Colorado Springs. Last week on the podcast, we heard from pitching prospect Taylor Youngman, as well as Sky Sox manager Rick Sweet. And this week, another person that I caught up with, reliever Corey Knebel, who's having a great season in Colorado Springs. And he sat down with me in this week's edition of Catching Up with the Crew.
Let's catch up with the crew.
Back on the program, and we chat now with reliever Corey Knebel. And Corey, here we are in Colorado Springs, and you know, it's your third organization in 2 years since you've been drafted. I mean, is that kind of hard to believe that you've already been in three different organizations and already in the big leagues too?
Yeah, it is. You know, there's a lot going on there, and it's definitely hard to believe, but you know, I feel really blessed to have all of it. You know, get called up my first real season, and three different organizations. I mean, it's, you know, it's been a ride. It has been a ride.
You've been in a couple of different trades too. When you went from Detroit to Texas, Joaquin Soria, and now you got traded from Texas to the Brewers for Yovani Gallardo. Those are pretty two big names. But it says a lot to you that the teams that are acquiring you, these are the guys they wanted you especially.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I feel really honored about that. And it's, you know, just try to not think about it and go out there and play my game and keep doing what I do, and I feel like everything will just kind of come into play after that.
Talk a little bit about pitching here in Colorado Springs. What's this like? Obviously, you're at the highest elevation of any ballpark in North America, which is hard to believe. What's it like pitching here, and do you think about that?
At first when I got here, we were all, thinking, what are we going to do? There's got to be different ways to pitch here. I remember last year when I came here with the Express, if you try and overthrow a ball, if you throw a curveball and it doesn't break, you try and overthrow it and it's going to be even worse. And that's what you have to learn here is you can't try and do too much, which is what I learned in the first few outings I had. And if you just try and, be relaxed, hit your spots, everything will come into play. But if you try and overthrow, if you try and overthink it, you're going to get in trouble here. And the only thing you really notice about the elevation is that you get winded easily. During conditioning, you get winded easily. And during a workout, you get winded. It's just the same as any other ballpark. There might be a little more home runs than normal, but, there's not too much difference here.
Do you see, and obviously you're a fastball and you're a curveball guy, do you see that when you throw a curveball here that it doesn't have as much tilt as in other places?
You can notice that it's not as sharp here. I know whenever we went to Round Rock in Nashville, the humidity, the sweat, it helped me a lot. You can't sweat out here. You can notice that there's not as much depth. It's not as sharp in other places, but it's not something I want to think about. I'm going out there. I know, we'll have to play here eventually. Even if we weren't, this wasn't our home field. There's the Rockies are right over there, and it's the same thing. You can't think about it too much. Mm-hmm.
We talked about your curveball a little bit. When did you develop that pitch? I mean, we were able to see it in spring training, and I saw it last year in AAA when you were with Toledo with the Tigers still. But it's a hammer. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You can't get around it. How did you develop the curveball?
Well, I never really had a curveball in high school. I was a fastball changeup guy throwing, upper 80s. And then in college, I lost my changeup and I was fastball only. And then sophomore year, I kind of learned a curveball a little bit and threw it every now and then. And then junior year, I decided to spike it. And then once I got drafted, I guess is whenever it just came into play, I got drafted and I started throwing it a little more and throwing it harder. And it became my go-to pitch for a while.
It's pretty crazy that, you just said you're pretty much just a fastball only guy. And then you're a supplemental first round pick. Is that kind of hard to believe a little bit?
It was definitely a shock for me. I remember that day me and my dad were golfing and, we didn't expect for me to get drafted that day for the first two rounds. And I was expecting maybe fifth or sixth round. And all of a sudden that comes and it's like, man, I really got to learn more pitches. I can't just get away with one pitch. So, it's been helping me out. And then I develop another pitch, I got 3 to 4 pitches now. So it's, pro ball has definitely been something that's helpful for me. You can't just get away with one pitch.
Go back to draft day a little bit. Do you remember who was picked before you?
I do not remember who was picked before me.
He just happened to make his big league debut against the Brewers a couple days ago, Michael Lorenzen.
Lorenzen.
How about that?
Huh? He was before me. Okay, yeah, I played with him my freshman year in college. Yeah, that's awesome. I forgot he was right before me with the Reds, right?
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, there are some guys that, you get locked in on draft day and people are watching the internet because that's how a lot of people find out is just mm-hmm. watching it online. And, it's not like the NFL draft where you get the phone call and you're in the big war room and all that kind of stuff. It's a little different with the baseball draft. There's so many rounds. But there are guys who will say, all right, that guy was picked in front of me. That guy was picked in front of me. And they'll put the target on their backs and stuff. Mm-hmm. But obviously you were out playing golf and just having a good time. And it was very relaxed.
It was. It was really, really relaxing day, me and my dad. And, to have that was just insane. It was awesome. It was a great feeling.
Talk a little bit about your college experience as we chat with Corey Knebel and going to Texas, obviously a very rich baseball program and athletically a great program, but you had an opportunity to play for Augie Garrido. I got to imagine that was one of the highlights of your life. I mean, he's one of the best coaches out there, certainly fiery, but he's a fantastic and a legend. What was it like playing for him?
You know, it was great. You know, at some points he does get a little fiery, and that's good. You know, as a manager, you got to get fired up. And it was great to have him. You know, he always had your back, and he knew exactly what he wanted to do. He had a plan every time, and it was, I mean, I couldn't think of anyone else I wanted to play for at Texas than Augie Garrido. You know, it was, I don't even know what to say about it. You know, it was great. You know, it was great having him there, and I know he's got a few years left at Texas, and you know, just playing for the most winningest coach in the NCAA was one of the coolest things, you know, in college.
And now you're reunited with one of your college teammates, Taylor Youngman. He's just a couple of locker stalls away. He was a junior when you were a freshman, right? So you guys were only teammates that year. But you guys ended up going to the same high school for your senior years, even though you guys weren't teammates, Georgetown High School. Do you know some of the famous alums that went to Georgetown, by the way?
You know, I don't really know too many famous Georgetown alums.
Brian Anderson.
There we go. I know that. Yeah.
That's the one I was getting at. He's like, all right, make sure you tell Corey, make sure you tell Taylor that Brian Anderson, proud Georgetown High School alum. So, again, you're reunited with Taylor Youngman. You guys, I'm sure, became pretty good friends when you were at Texas. What's it like hanging out here in Colorado Springs and being his teammate again?
You know, it's fun. You know, we were teammates in college, and I followed him around. I wanted to be just like him. I saw him his freshman year, and he had a great freshman year. And so I wanted to be just like him. I ended up going to the same high school as him, going to Texas. And I followed him around a lot. And, you know, I asked him for help, and he helped me out. And now here it's the same way. You know, I'm a new guy to the Brewers, and he's been here for 4 or 5 years. And he's a good guy to kind of follow around. And he's been helping me out, you know, telling me what to do, what not to do. Make sure you watch out for this. And we just have a lot of fun sometimes, you know. He just talks a lot of crap to me and talk it right back. So, you know, it's fun. It's like college all over again.
Now, in college, you got a nickname. What was the nickname that you got in college?
My nickname in college was Bird Dog.
Okay. Now, you've taken Bird Dog, and I understand that you were pretty much born to be a brewer, a Milwaukee brewer, because you brew your own beer.
Yeah, I do. I just started brewing my own beer this past off season, and just because, you know, one of my buddies had talked about it, and he said his dad's been doing it, and now he's doing it, and it's a great way to save money, make your own stuff. It's a great hobby to have, and so I started it, and you know, 2 or 3 months later, I'm with the Brewers now.
Are you going to try and market this thing, or is it just, hey, I'm just going to try and save some cash and just make my own beer for my own personal use?
I'm just trying to save some cash and make 2 to 3 batches, you know, in the off season and during the season. And so, you know, when I get back home, I've got it there. So when my family and friends come over, they can enjoy it, and that's it. And I might have some for the wedding, but yeah, I don't think I'm going to try and market it at all.
What's the name of your beer?
There's no name, but my buddy, he really wants to name it Bird Brew. Bird Dog Brew. Yeah.
Okay. I like it. You know, you're in the bullpen, and have you always been a bullpen guy? You were always in the bullpen when you were in college, so now you're bullpen in pro ball. You must have experienced quite a few pranks that have gone down in the bullpen throughout the course of a game. Is there any one that you can tell legally on the air that you like the best?
I think, you know, the best prank was when I got called up to the Tigers. You know, I was in the bullpen, and I was a long inning guy, and I was really nervous. And then, you know, they come up to me, and Jabba and the pitching coach are like, hey, Corey, get hot. Let's go. So, all right. So I get in there. You know, I hadn't stretched yet. It was kind of early still. And I start stretching, getting all ready, and I start throwing some pitches and getting ready to go. And then they come and get me. Hey, we're just kidding with you, man. You know, it's, sit down. You don't need to get up. So it was that was good, and I started laughing, and it was – you know, everyone kind of came up to me and started laughing and joking around. So it was a good feeling to have, you know, all them messing around with me and making me feel welcome there.
Well, Tim Dillard is one of your teammates now, and he had you in one of his segments that he does online through his social media accounts try and sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game without using the word the. And I thought you did a pretty good job with it, not going to lie. What's it like being with Tim Dillard and knowing that at any given moment he could be videoing you for something funny?
And that's what he does do. You know, he makes a lot of videos of people, and he is trying to be funny, and he's great. You know, he's great to have in the bullpen. He's always joking around with us, helping us, you know, stay focused, not take it too seriously. And, you know, he's really good at – he'll take care of the calls from Fred Dabney. And, you know, if he's joking around, and then he says someone's in, he'll stop. You know, no more games. You know, he knows you're going to get ready and it's time to get serious. But up until then, you know, he's joking around with you, helping you stay relaxed. You know, you don't want to get too serious in this game, because if you do, then you start getting in trouble. You know, it's always about having fun, and Tim Diller does a great job of that.
On the serious side, and I'll leave you with this, the fact that you got drafted in June of 2013 and you make your major league debut in May of 2014, not even a calendar year after you got drafted, for me, if it happened to me, it would blow my mind that it happened that fast. Did you even have an opportunity to think about what was happening because it was happening so fast?
You know, at the time, I didn't have any time to think about what was going on. All I knew is that I was very excited. I had no idea how to control my mind. It was going everywhere. There were so many things going on. And then getting called down, getting called back up, getting traded again. And now it's finally helped me relax, and it's starting to settle down. And now I know, you know, I think it was too soon. But, you know, I was very blessed to get called up. And I think now, you know, this is good for me to kind of develop my pitches, and that's what I'm doing now, is developing my pitches, trying to get outs, and taking one step at a time.
It's not easy going up and down, riding the yo-yo. How much did you learn from that last year?
Last year, I did learn a lot. You know, when I got called down, you know, I knew it was for a reason. They had called me in telling me, hey, you know, we just need some guy to come in. We need a lefty. We've got a new team coming in, and, you know, we need some fresh arms, and, you know, we want you to get some more work. You know, you didn't get too much work. You're a cleanup guy. So, I mean, I was going once every 3 or 4 days, going 3 to 4 innings. And so, you know, they wanted me to get down there and get some work in. And so I kind of took that as what I did up there wasn't good enough. So I need to go down here to AAA, and I need to work on this. I need to get these down. And I did. When I got called back down, I had some of my best outings. You know, I really learned from that. And then I got called back up, and I felt great. You know, everything was good. I was relaxed. I knew what I was doing. I made my pitches, and so it's, you know, it's definitely a learning experience.
Corey, thanks so much for the time. I know you got a lot of stuff going on, but you were extremely impressive to us in spring training. You've thrown the ball well here so far in Colorado Springs. I've got no doubt we'll see you up in Milwaukee real soon. And stay healthy and enjoy your time down here.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
So far, Ken Abel this year in 13 games, he's got 5 saves and 6 opportunities and has struck out 19 batters in 12 and a third innings. That ERA, a little north of 5 at the moment, but the strikeout numbers are good, that curveball is a hammer, and Ken Abel is a guy that we might see here in Milwaukee in short order. And just a couple of days ago, I had an opportunity to catch up with Miller Park organist Dean Roscoe. He's been here since he was 18 years old and certainly has one of the best jobs in the business. So let's hear from Dean in this week's edition of Let's Break It Down.
Let's Break It Down.
It's time to break it down on Brewers on Tap this week. And this week we chat with Miller Park organist Dean Roscoe. Dean, obviously we're sitting right behind your organ here in Miller Park. And does it intimidate you at all looking at this thing on a day-to-day basis, or kind of fun now?
It's kind of fun. When we first got it, they actually had the guy that came from Lowry that designed this instrument and gave me a complete rundown of everything it can do, and there was a couple of special features he included in this one that wouldn't normally be included in this model, but I guess that was 6 or 7 years ago now, so gotten used to it over time. Yeah,
this is pretty exciting. How did you get into playing the organ? Was it at a really young age?
Yeah, I started formal lessons actually when I was about 10. I played the piano before that, and just the range of possibilities and things you can do with the instrument, either something like this or, of course, a traditional pipe organ as well. The variety and the power and everything that's exciting about it just, I guess, attracted me from a young age.
So you're talking about organs, and obviously you think of the big churches and the big pipes and all that stuff, and here you get the big sound system. What's the difference for you in terms of, you know, the power of the instrument?
In terms of going from an electronic like this to a church style pipe organ. Well, this is like a fun machine type deal. It's designed for entertainment purposes. They're actually marketing this line of instruments as a virtual orchestra now. So there's a lot of different orchestral sounds, strings and horns and that sorts of thing, and percussion instruments. So it actually can function a lot more like a one man type orchestra, which was the original intent of like the Wurlitzer theater organs in that of the 1920s. So. Yeah, but there's a lot of differences, and a lot of possibilities. But I sort of try to approach each instrument as it sits, mm-hmm. and get the most out of what it can do, as opposed to trying to make it into something that it's not. Of course,
sure.
But
it seems like you have unlimited opportunities here. You've got buttons of all sorts of different rhythm plus orchestration. You've got orchestral, some solo stuff, plus you got your keys that you got. Organ has less than the normal keys than a piano. Piano's got 88.
Sure.
This has less, but you have significantly more pedals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There's the expression pedal up here, which usually an organist would usually operate with his or her right foot, and there's controls that are mounted to the sides of that pedal as well for controlling anything you want. You can assign it to do anything you want. Your feet play these bass notes here. Like, if I can unmute the speakers here for you, mm-hmm. you play the bass notes with your feet here, and then you can do whatever you want up here. So the melody is mainly on the top here, and whatever else your accompaniment is on the bottom keyboard on a what's known as a two manual instrument like this, just keyboards. But yeah, so you have 61 notes and 25 for the feet.
How long did it take you to learn all this?
Sort of an ongoing process. That's kind of the easiest way to answer that question, I guess. You know, discovering new things, new sounds. There's tons of built-in stuff to this here that wouldn't even really be useful in the realm of ballpark playing. Stuff that wouldn't be suitable to use here, but everything, you know, everything that is suitable does a really nice job. So,
Dean, you've been here at Miller Park for a while now. When did you get your first job here at Miller Park?
2003. They hired me in 2003. So,
and you were how old?
I was 18. You do the math. So,
18.
Right out of high school.
So you're 18 years old and you're playing the organ in front of thousands of fans here on a nightly basis. Does that blow your mind at all?
Yeah, it kind of does, actually. Still, it doesn't get old. It's never gotten old, and I don't think it ever will. It's an exhilarating feeling, really. Yeah, I can make 45,000 people clap.
Now, do you have people telling you what songs to play at any given time?
Well, I work most in most connection with the audio producer, who's down in that the front booth of the control room there, and we're all connected via headset. So if there's a special feature they want to run, you know, music in conjunction with a scoreboard or whatever, like Here We Go Brewers or whatever, you know, something that also appears on the board, we coordinate that. So we're all on headset here, so we can communicate. But it's mostly the audio producer and myself.
So they'll be like, all right, play Charge now.
Yeah, or can we get a Charge here, or, you know, can we get something here, and it'll be up to me to decide what it is.
That's a lot of pressure, because it could be anything. You go, well, my fingers feel like playing this right now.
Yeah, it could be anything. Yeah, something to keep people entertained.
Dean Roscoe is chatting with us. He's the organist here at Miller Park. And Dean, a lot of baseball players grow up and they idolize a specific somebody who they want to be like when they're playing. Did you have an organist that you wanted to be like or emulate?
Early in my early musical life, I don't really want to say the nail in the coffin, but what did it for me, my aha moment in terms of the organ and saying to myself, this is what I need to be doing with the rest of my life, was attending the final hockey game played in Chicago Stadium in 1994, and a gentleman by the name of Frank Pellico is still their organist, and he and I have actually become pretty good friends. So in terms of playing for this sort of thing, he's a fabulous entertainer, just a phenomenal entertainer from the word go. So that was sort of one of my biggest influences there. In terms of more straight theater organ playing, I grew up listening to a lot of Dave Wickerham at the ballpark, at the Organ Piper out on Highway 100 in Greenfield, which still has live theater organ music 6 nights a week. But grew up listening to a lot of Dave Wickerham, Ron Rizzi when he moved here and took over. That sort of thing, just sort of developing my own style, choosing what I like from various other people and what you like and what you don't like, that sort of thing. I did a lot of playing for roller skating too, so that kind of rhythmic you know, playing for dancing. Sure. So that kind of rhythmic style as well. So
not a lot of red light, yellow light, green light at the roller skating rinks, right?
I do a little bit of that too, but yeah.
Now what, you don't just play here at Miller Park, you play at other places as well, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I play at the Organ Piper here and there, sort of on a fill-in basis, and I'm the principal organist at Jesu Church downtown on the campus of Marquette University. So you talked about the church pipe organs. Yeah. That happens to be the largest pipe organ in the state, so it's quite an instrument.
Very powerful, I'm sure.
It is.
All right, we talked about the pedals earlier, and I was doing some research. I am not an organ player. I'm not a piano player. My mom is, but I understand that there are special shoes that you can order to be an organ player.
There are. I keep my set at church. They don't go outside. So the sole is a little bit thinner, so you can feel your way in the pedal board a little easier, and the heel's a little bit higher, so you can use your heel to play the notes as well. So it just makes it easier.
Is it kind of like using a weighted bat and then using a normal bat if you're a baseball player, and kind of like, you know, you can warm up in your normal shoes and then put on those, and it's, man, my feet feel so much faster.
It kind of does work that way, actually. That's exactly right. Yeah, that's an accurate comparison. Okay. Or to playing barefoot or whatever, it just makes everything ergonomically easier, I guess. So yeah.
Fancy, we got to get some of those shoes. Okay, so we went to Twitter and we asked a couple of people if they had questions for you, and a lot of people chimed in. And Justin O'Brien, Twitter handle reject69187. Don't take anything with the Twitter handle, but he asked what type of equipment that you use, and also do you play all the songs out of memory or sheet music?
Mostly from memory, and this is a Lowry Prestige. It was new about 6 or 7 years ago, and they've got three, maybe four subsequent models since then. So these are still being made and sold, so you can find them around.
All right, so that was Justin O'Brien's question. At Brewer Nation, we kind of talked about it already, but you talk with the audio guy in terms of having carte blanche and what you want to play. What about pregame? Do you have a free rein of what you want to play pregame?
Yeah, within the realm of sensibility. I mean, we try to keep it upbeat.
Okay.
That's one of the main guidelines. So
contemporary hits and all that? You play a little top 40 on the organ?
Yeah, it's certainly possible. Yeah, yeah.
All right, another question. This is from Dustin Zick. How many times have you resisted the urge to break out in an organ solo in the middle of a game?
Well, try to keep that sort of thing in check, you know, but it's just, I've got plenty of opportunity to play anyway, so okay. To just, I think the audio engineer would take care of that pretty quick.
He's got a slide board. He can put you on mute whenever he wants. All right, at Hemming and Hawing, she wants to bring back a little bit more Brazilian sleigh bells. So can you bring back a little more Brazilian sleigh bells?
Yeah, I'll play it tonight. As a matter of fact, I can do that, sure.
Okay. And she also wants to know if your stuff is available on iTunes or a CD, if you've got like a recording of some of the stuff you do.
We've not done one for stadium purposes. That's been an item of discussion. So hopefully sometime soon, I'd love to. But I've got 10 recordings that I've released over the last, I don't know, handful of years for roller skating purposes. Everything was arranged and recorded for roller dance skating. So
anywhere she could pick it up?
Just
roller skating rink near you.
They're available through me. So okay. if she wants to get in touch with me, people have various ways of doing that around here. So yeah.
That's good. All right. So we've got one more question for you, and it's a three-part question. This comes from at Zach M. Weber. He actually works here at the ballpark. Number one, are you a donor?
Yes.
Okay. Dean Roscoe is a donor. Okay. Number two, he wants more Zorba the Greek. Is that one of your favorites?
Yeah, that's usually something I use when the Brewers are on offense.
Okay.
So yeah, we've sort of got a couple of lists to pick from, mostly in my head actually. But things I would play when the opposing team is at bat and when the Brewers are at bat, and that's one of those things that would fit in best when the Brewers are at bat. Okay. So sure, we can do that.
All right, a little bit more Zorba the Greek, and then the final question for you is: if there was an all organ rock group that was formed, you know, people playing the organ, what would your rock group name be?
How can I answer this without thinking about it? There was an Ultra Lounge album put out maybe 15 or 20 years ago. It was called Organs in Orbit.
Okay.
That might be fun.
Yeah. There was a guy who actually commented on Twitter that said the organisms.
Okay.
Not bad.
You go, not bad. That's solid. That's solid.
All right. I like your idea, though. Organs and orbit. Nice. Very nice. Was that you? Nice in the front. Well done. He's getting involved in the podcast. That's fantastic. Well, Dean, it's been great breaking it down. This is an interesting thing for sure, and I am just marveled the fact that you can do it and entertain so well, and it's been a pleasure getting to know you.
You as well. Thanks. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Dean Roscoe, the Miller Park organist since 2003. He knows how to tickle those ivories and fire up the crowd here at Miller Park.
Checking in on the farm.
As we told you last week, we rolled out a new blog featuring all things minor league baseball and the Brewers system. You can see that at minordetails.mlblogs.com. But in this week's edition of Checking In on the Farm, I want to look at a trio of Brevard County Manatees who are having a fantastic season so far in the Florida State League. That would be right-hander Tristan Archer, who's 1-0 and has yet to give up a run in six games over 9 1/3 innings. He's struck out 7 and has not walked a batter. As well as right-hander Preston Ganey. He, too, has not given up an earned run, has struck out 13 13 2/3 innings over 8 games so far. And finally, left-hander Trevor Seidenberger. He is 2-0 in 7 games. He's got a save, has struck out 15 batters in 12 1/3 innings, and is yet to give up an earned run. Those three with a combined earned run average of 0.00. Doesn't get much better than that. And speaking of Seidenberger, he leads the Florida State League in opponents' batting average against. Again, just giving up 4 hits against 43 at-bats. Good for an average under 100. That's half the Mendoza line, or if you're keeping track, half the Euchre line. And a fun fact about Trevor Seidenberger, he hails from Pflugerville, Texas. If you haven't heard of Pflugerville, Texas, don't feel bad. But if you do know the hit TV show Friday Night Lights, that's where the TV show was filmed, Pflugerville, Texas. Again, for more information on the Brewers minor league system, visit our blog at minordetails.mlblogs.com.
Tweet this. Let's check in on social media.
A lot of Brewers minor leaguers and major leaguers took to social media to voice their opinions on the NFL's fines on the New England Patriots, Tom Brady. Tom Brady suspended 4 games, a couple of draft picks, and $1 million for Deflategate. Obviously, lots of Mother's Day tweets going out. Everybody wearing pink cleats, wearing pink bats and pink wristbands this last Sunday. But our highlight on social media, as it generally does, comes from Colorado Springs Sky Sox reliever Tim Dillard. He's been in the Brewers organization for a long time, been up in the big leagues as well. But he does his 30-second player interviews. And in his most recent post of the player interviews in 30 seconds, he chatted with outfielder Brian Peterson to see if he could name all 8 Harry Potter movies. Let's hear how Brian did.
Can you name all 8 Harry Potter movies?
Okay, Harry Potter 1, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, Harry Potter and the Lawnmower, Harry Potter and the Field of Gray People, Harry Potter 3. There's not 8 Harry Potter movies. I think that's a lie.
There's 8 Harry Potter movies.
Okay. The Harry Potter and Gandalf the Wizard. Harry Potter trilogy.
Not too shabby. I think I might have got 3 or 4. But Brian Peterson, a valiant effort on trying to name all 8 Harry Potter movies.
Here's what's on tap with the Brewers.
Well, the Brewers are on a 10-game road trip next week. We head to New York to take on the Mets, and then the Detroit Tigers and the Atlanta Braves, and yours truly will actually be on the call for the Detroit and Atlanta Braves series. But once that set of games is over, the Brewers will come back for a 3-game set against the defending World Series champion San Francisco Giants starting on Memorial Day, May 25th, through Wednesday the 27th. Series gets underway with a 1 p.m. start time on Memorial Day. Because it's a Miller Monday, terrace reserve tickets are just $9, and the Brewers will wear special camo jerseys honoring the past and present military personnel. For tickets to the Memorial Day series, visit brewers.com.
And Grammy-nominated country artist Joe Nichols is coming to Miller Park on Country Night on Friday, May 29th. Brewers take on the Diamondbacks, and then after the game, Nichols will take to the stage to perform a free full-length concert for all fans in attendance. For details on Joe Nichols and the rest of the concert series, visit brewers.com/concerts. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Brewers on Tap. Don't forget to tweet in your questions to @Brewers on Twitter using the hashtag Brewers on Tap. Got a lot of those questions in our interview with organist Dean Roscoe. Thanks to our great guest, prospect Corey Knebel with the Colorado Springs Sky Sox and Miller Park organist Dean Roscoe. I'm Jeff Levering. Thanks for listening to the official podcast of the Milwaukee Brewers. This is Brewers on Tap.